Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I initiated this entire call from my iPad, which was super weird because my computer hadn't started up yet.
Oh, that is weird.
That's living the screen sharing life. I always dreamed of having a vacation home. You know, being flush enough with cash. You're buying a house, right? You bought a house. Like, imagine having another house.
I can barely handle the
Right? Like, one is a lot of house. But I always dreamed about that, and I've never been able to afford anything like that. But I do have a second computer that I sometimes live in.
Vacation computer.
So there's,
yeah, sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, big sir, I'd like you to be better. Please hurry up.
I have spent only a little bit of time there and mainly doing like stuff that is not majorly adversely affected by Big Sur, which is like web browsing, writing, like that stuff, all pretty much fine. Yeah.
There was a period, there was one beta where videos wouldn't play in Big Sur. And I was like,
oh yeah. I had one, and I think I talked about this on the member Slack the other day. I had one where I kept trying to play a YouTube video. And it would, like, anything, it would fail. I restarted the browser, and I was like, what is going on? And I finally Googled around and discovered that there was some experimental codec, like a VP9 codec that was enabled that you could turn off in the develop menu. Sure enough, everything started working again.
Interesting.
Who knows? Why do that?
Anyway, it is enough of that talk, enough Mac talk, whatever.
Screw that.
We have to move on to what is, I think, the only annual recurring segment, or certainly our first recurring segment in the history of this podcast, because of course the podcast, famous asterisk, for being sort of not formatted and having no format, and we just talk and it's fun. I like it. People like it. It's good. But we do have one segment, and that's iPhone Day delivery information.
Where is your truck?
So Dan, tell me, it's iPhone Day.
It is.
Where's your iPhone?
Oh, boy. I wish I knew. Well, I do know, Jason, because there's a map now. I can tell you, looking at this right now, that the truck is, about two or three blocks away. But, caveat.
Keep circling your house part. And then blowing right past, right?
It was much closer a few minutes ago. It was only about a block away a few minutes ago, and now it has gone away, further away. I loaded up the map this morning, and I actually have two packages which seem to be on the same truck, one from Apple, one from Amazon. And it's funny because right now I can look at the map on both of them, and the map on both of them suggests strongly to me that they're on the same truck, and yet they have different delivery windows. It seems
I wonder about if they load the truck in waves, and then they based on a map, a route map, and then they unload them, right? Because that's the thing, is like, you can't have, if you got a big truck full of stuff, you can't, even if they go past your house, if your phone is like way in the back, they can't deliver your phone. Then they're going to deliver whatever is next.
To me, it's bananas that I would have two packages, same truck. One has a 12:15 to 4:15 window, and one has a 3:15 to 7:15 window. It's like,
They cross.
They overlap. They overlap. That's fair. But they cannot possibly be, like, we can all agree, it doesn't seem like it would possibly be efficient to go to my house twice.
I think that's true. I think that's true. What's the Venn diagram there does include a little bit of overlap. But yes, what kind of delivery is it that is both at noon and at 7?
Yeah. And the phone is actually earlier, which is unusual. But it said 3:15 to 7:15 earlier, and then when I reloaded, it came back to 12:15 to 4:15. I'm like,
the logistics stuff is amazing, that anything gets delivered anywhere.
It is, and I, I'm very appreciative of all these people who are delivering packages, especially because we order probably so much, even more stuff now than we were ordering, say, 9 or 10 months ago. But it is maddening to watch the little truck drive around and be like, just come here. Anyways, it's fine. I'm distracting myself by looking at other stuff online, and
Have we established what model you got?
I think we did. Pro 12 Pro Pacific Blue 128. I went down from a 256 on my 11 Pro to a 128.
Right.
And now I'm trying to figure out. Every year the migration process changes a little bit, and so
I just did this.
Yeah, and so now I'm thinking, like, well, do I I don't want to back it up to my... I back up stuff to my computer every once in a while, mainly when I'm installing a, like that first beta, like over the summer. I do like a backup to my Mac, so I can have that like archived to be sure, just in case anything goes wrong. And then once the GM eventually comes out, I just delete those. I don't need them on my computer. It's fine. And the rest of the time, I use iCloud Backup, which most of the time, totally fine these days.
So I have two iPhones that are my review units. Oh, a cat just leaped up on me. Yeah, they're going to take over. Soon enough, this podcast is just going to be meowing.
Cat, why don't you tell me about...
Yeah, we'll see if she has any opinions about it. So two iPhones. I've got a black 12 and a graphite 12 Pro, because Apple has decided that I don't like color. They're not necessarily wrong, although I would have loved to have a blue.
They read all your posts about being colorblind is what it that is. I think, and they're like, oh, well, Jason doesn't care.
I think that. Well, and they also know, I think at some point I said to them that I always am going to choose the black phone, and that has generally been true. And let me tell you, I started writing something about it yesterday, and I just kind of ran out of steam, and I couldn't finish it. But I was going to write something that's basically the aesthetic review of the two models, because I have them both, and I've spent a couple of days with them. You know, the short version of it is I really like the 12, and I really like that matte aluminum anodized ring, and I really like the shiny black back, and I think like it is the maybe since the jet black iPhone 7 was the last time I picked up an iPhone, and I was like, oh yeah, like this is really good. I migrated to both of them using different means. So I set up the 12 Pro, and my existing 11 Pro popped up and said, hey, would you like to migrate to that other phone I see? And I was like, all right. And so I had them do their little migration where they talk to each other and transfer the data directly. Mm-hmm. And on the 12, I used iCloud.
Okay.
And my message is, use iCloud. Because although that phone-to-phone transfer is nice because it doesn't use any bandwidth, and if you're in a low bandwidth location, you don't need to use it. If you have decent internet, you should use the iCloud backup, because the 12 restored way faster than the 12 Pro.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so there was a while where it was like a two-stage thing. Like you would migrate like your settings and stuff, and then the rest of it would be done by like pulling stuff down from the cloud anyways.
I think... I'm not 100% on this, but it seemed like the now I'm going to restore portion of the thing, which does get the phone up sooner, right? It gets it up, but some of your apps aren't there.
Right.
And then you sort of like have a half usable phone in the meantime. That happens on iCloud for sure. I'm not entirely convinced that... it's just a guess. I'm really just guessing here. It seems to me that maybe the direct transfer method looks, and if the app is the same, you know, if the new phone can use that same app, you know, because there's app slicing and stuff, it just copies it directly, because the whole purpose of it is to reduce the amount of data transfer necessary, because I think it really is meant for people who are in a place where data transfer is not free-flowing. But regardless, it definitely felt like it took way longer on the Pro doing the direct transfer than on the 12, which was doing the iCloud backup. So I highly recommend people just do the iCloud backup. It was fast. And then, you have to wait a little while the if you've got a decent connection, though. I mean, it was very fast for me restoring from
I always find the apps just seem to like... I have a lot of apps. I think that's the problem. Yeah, exactly. I enabled the offloading thing recently, and I think that was actually a good move, because it made me remember that I have a ton of apps that I just never use, and they're there because I'm the prospect of going through hundreds of apps and deleting things. Because I always just feel like, but what if I need that? Right, like, you know, and so I'm so bad about it.
I played a fun game this week, which is a new game that anyone running iOS 14 can play, and I played it this week. And it's I'm going to call it Fate of the Apps. And the game
Fate of the Apps.
That's right. And the game is, you delete an app, and then iOS 14 says, do you want me to remove this app or banish it to the app library? And then I get to sit there and think, do I want this on my phone, but just off where I can find it? Or do I want this removed from my phone because I'm never going to use it. Yeah. And I got to do that with like four or five apps this week. And it was actually really fun because it was like, do I? Yes, I do want this. Send this to the app library. Put it away. File it for later.
And then, send it to the cornfield.
Yeah. And then, well, or you'd remove it from the phone, at which point it is really in the cornfield. So it was a fun little thing. But I like that they did that. I really like because I have these apps and I've got all my other pages on my phone turned off. Yep, and, same. You know, I don't want to, like, turn it on and then move it and then hide it, right? Like, that's right. Bad UX. Yeah. So they set it up where you can just, when you're trying to delete an app, it can say, or we could send it to the app library. I'm like, yes, this one. Some of them didn't make it, but some of them made it to the app library.
You know, the app library, upstate. It's a nice place.
It's a really nice place. It's real nice.
I was going to say the corollary to that game, which I discovered by accident the other day, which maybe part of me knew was a thing, but like I never really bothered before, as I was going into the app store and I was looking at app updates and I saw an update for an app and I was like, why do I even have this app? And I'm like, just reflexively, I swiped on it. And when you do that, it says, do you want to delete this? I was like, oh, yes, I do want to. You've got me like thinking about it right at this moment when I, rather than having to go search it out and be like, where is that app? What page is it on? I was just like, oh, yeah, just get rid of this. And that was nice. That was a nice little moment of I felt very satisfied with like, yes, I don't need this app. Why am I wasting my bandwidth updating it?
Oh, it turns out Apple has done some work to improve app management, which is good because there are a lot of apps.
We all have a lot of apps.
I mean, I've definitely had that same thing where I've realized that based on an update that I'm like, that app is still on my phone. I downloaded that to park somewhere 2 years ago.
Right, like,
I don't need that app.
That's what it is.
I really don't need that app.
I have a complication in migrating this year, which actually I think was the thing last year a little bit too, which is, I think people might remember I talked about this many, many months ago. I have an AT&T eSIM currently.
Oh, right.
And so switching over, I think, will basically, because I bought the phone on the upgrade plan, it knows I'm an AT&T customer, right. And it's all through that. So even though it is, I believe, unlocked, as every upgrade program phone is, it still comes with an AT&T SIM in it. And I think by virtue of the way that the transfer process has worked to date, at least, it's not like you can be like, I have an eSIM on this phone. Just put that eSIM on the new phone. Like, that doesn't work.
Can't airdrop your SIM.
I don't think that is possible currently. It seems like it should be, but it's probably tied to the IMEI and stuff. So they have to figure out a way to reprovision it or something like that. So I will need to transition to the physical SIM and then probably get in touch with AT&T again and be like, can we move this back to an eSIM? But I have to do it every year, which is a pain. It really feels like, you know, you mentioned the other day, I think in a sort of a side conversation in the Six Color Slack about Max with cellular stuff, right? And how Apple's moved away from having a physical SIM card, which is one thing that can make it easier for Apple Silicon Macs to have cellular connections. And it's like, yes, however, the processes around all these things are still kind of annoying because they just have not, it's like halfway there, right? Like, you don't need a physical SIM, but a lot of times it's still kind of a pain to do some of the eSIM stuff.
Right.
I will have to go through that dance again. However, last time I did it, it was a lot easier. First time I had to do it, I was like driving around to AT&T stores like a year ago, and I was like, this is a pain. And then when I did it over the summer, it was actually, I could do it all online, and they did it for me, and it was great. It was much better than it had been before. So it's just it's an annoying process to go through.
Yeah. Yeah, well, keep me informed about your eSIM journey.
Yeah, I mean, I only do it because right now I have through an advertiser on one of the shows, Mint Mobile sent me a SIM for a year's worth of free data. And I was like, well, why wouldn't I use this? it's free.
Yeah. Yeah, you get a second, you get an eSIM plus that SIM, and then you've got...
Yeah, and you can set one to data and one to calling, so I still have my number, and then I use data for other stuff. It was only a problem, I will say this, it was a problem when I went through the process of doing my prepping to get my new phone, when I was in the Apple Store app, and it was like, oh, put in your information and whatever so we can like check your upgrade program. And when I came to the part where it's like putting your phone number, it kept putting in the Mint Mobile phone number and being like, I don't recognize it, and it couldn't change it. There was no way to, so I had to deactivate that line temporarily. and then go back in. I was like, oh, well, this is weird. Stupid, but okay.
So I wrote my iPad Air review and posted that this week. That was an embargo review. So I don't have any embargo review of the iPhones. I got them. It's a sign of when the embargo is going to be when Apple contacts you and says, we would like to give you a briefing at, you know, 9 a.m. on Tuesday, and then you'll receive the iPhones on Tuesday, and you think, oh, well, Tuesday morning is the embargo. So I got the iPhones post-embargo and have been trying them out. But, you know, all the embargo reviews drop for the iPhones, so I don't feel like I'm not going to rush a review, because what's the point? I need to spend time with them. The first reviews are out, and those people all spent a week with the phone, so there's no point in doing that. But I did spend 5 days or so with the iPad Air, and so I got to write about that for Wednesday. And it's a weird product, because it is really just a slightly decontented 11-inch iPad Pro. And this is the case, we've talked about this sometimes, the you end up in this weird state where you know Apple is going to do something, but they haven't done it yet. And so you're looking at a state of affairs, a lay of the land that you know is really a transitory period. And that's what this right. feels like, is there are obviously going to be new iPad Pros. I'm going to write about this at some point. They are going to be higher end with more impressive features. And they're going to spread the gap between the iPad Pro and the iPad Air. But for right now, the iPad Air is basically an iPad Pro, missing a few features, for a little bit less. Not as much less as you might think, because it's more expensive than the old iPad Air. It's about a $150 gap, I think, at the same storage level. But they also have a low storage one that's cheaper. So I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird product. And I discover also that I really like Face ID on the iPad. And you come to expect it. And then suddenly there's a little arrow saying, touch your finger here, friend. I go, that's weird. So anyway, it's a weird place to be, because I think there's another shoe to drop for the iPad line, and it's what's going to be on the iPad Pro, but they had to release this. You know, it's got the A14. Presumably there's an A14X essentially in the works, and that will be a new iPad Pro, and that'll probably be in the spring. But for now, people are like, well, what should I buy if I'm torn between an 11-inch Pro and the Air? Like, I kind of don't know what to tell you. Clearly that 11-inch Pro is going to become something different, but, you know, right now, you've got two models that are very close in price, and the one that's slightly more expensive has slightly better features. But the one that's cheaper actually has better single core and better graphics. So, I mean, really, I think if you are used to the iPad Pro, you should stay with the iPad Pro, because you're used to Face ID and stuff like that. I don't know why you'd be buying a replacement if yours broke or something like that. But like, if you're coming up, or you only had an Air before, or a regular iPad, then it's a real no-brainer, because this one's cheaper and it's pretty much got all the, you know, it doesn't have ProMotion and it doesn't have Face ID. And there are a few little things it doesn't have, but it's got Pencil 2, which is great, and it's got. The Touch ID is good. It's just not as convenient as Face ID. And it works in the Magic Keyboard. So, you know, it's basically an iPad Pro for cheap. And that's because the iPad Pros are going to be something else. They're going to ascend. I don't know where.
It's to the next level.
Next level. Next. Yeah, exactly. They'll be up there. So yeah. It's weird. It's weird because, again, it's very clearly Apple's making moves, and this is move one. And then everybody else is like, and
right. Well, yeah, like you said, sometimes you can tell, right? Like, this is like a weird situation where it really seems like things maybe just got a little out of whack in terms of their scheduling for Silicon, and it's like, we got to do this now, kind of makes sense, but, you know, we're gonna update the Pro and we just can't do it right now for right. whatever reason. So there you are.
Yeah, it's I'll share my real moment of insight. I don't know, maybe insight, it seemed insightful to me at the time. Which is when I was doing the math and realizing that the iPad Air is only at that one level, only like $150 different. Because you think like, oh, well, the iPad Air, they brought the Pro features way down into the mid-range. It's like, I don't know. iPad Air is way up high. It's not in the middle of the mid-range. Let's put it that way, right? It is more expensive than you might think, especially when you start adding in more storage off the base level. And I had that moment because, again, my rule is whatever Apple, you never bank on Apple prices being lower than you think. They'll always be higher than you think. My moment of realization was I looked at that $150 spread between the Air and the Pro, and I said, oh, the next iPad Pros are going to be more expensive. Like, sure. That's it. It's not going to be $799. The low-end iPad Pro is not going to be $799. I have no facts to back that up. It's literally just looking at the iPad Air and saying, there's no way they're going to leave a $150 gap there. They're going to raise the price of the iPad Pro. They're going to boost it. They're going to put a lot of new features in it. They're going to probably start it at a higher storage tier, maybe. Like, they'll load it up with stuff, and maybe the 11-inch will be a little bit... It won't be 11 inches. Maybe they'll make a bigger model or something. I don't know exactly what. That's the mystery of it. But, like... I just had that moment where I realized, oh yeah, that's not going to be, the iPad Pro's not going to start at $799 anymore. It'll be like, we saw where they've lifted up the prices of the iPhones this year again.
Right. Yeah.
They'll do that with the iPad Pro. Like, the next time it'll be like a super powerful, incredibly powerful product, and it'll start at $899, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I
never bet against Apple.
Raising prices. Yeah. I mean, unless they're making a smaller HomePod, apparently.
Mm.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the big questions are, you know, there's still stuff, as you point out in your review and as others have pointed out in their reviews, that justifies the higher price tag. I'm just curious about what other, you know, enhancements along the way are going to be used as the differentiators. Like, right now, the primary things are, you know, the camera system with the LiDAR and the ProMotion display and... You know, those are kind of the Face ID, right? Like, those are sort of the big marquee feature differentiators. I think of those, the ProMotion is the one that a lot of people might be, you know, more motivated to move up to a Pro for, because it feels like it's got like a somewhat more tangible improvement on it. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a question of the...
This is the trick, is I don't know exactly what they are planning on doing. There's some rumors about, like, that it'll be a better display, that'll be like an HDR display, that there's the mini LED stuff that they're doing and stuff like that. I don't know. I really don't. But it is hard to look at the iPad Air, and we talked about this when they announced it, and not think that Apple has, like, great confidence. Like, they migrated those features now knowing they had other features to differentiate the iPad Pro. So they will. I don't know quite what it is, but I feel like they will, and then they will also use that opportunity to push the price up. And we'll see. We'll see if that happens. But when I looked at the price comparison, because it is, this thing is, I got it right in front of me here, like, it's an iPad Pro, you know, essentially. It's just missing a couple of things, but it's mostly an iPad Pro. So... which is great, because now you can get in. I think I said it's now officially Apple's cheapest laptop, because if you buy it with a Magic Keyboard, it's $898. Mm-hmm. So it's cheaper than a MacBook Air. So it's Apple's cheapest laptop now is an iPad, which it wasn't before, which is also funny. The iPad Pro plus Magic Keyboard was more than a MacBook Air. And of course, you could get like the Logitech keyboard or some other keyboard, and it would be a lot cheaper. And I actually I never got it before, but I have they sent me a Logitech keyboard. That's the one that they made for the 11-inch Pro, and works with the new Air as well. And I'm gonna check it out. It is, you know, like we were saying about Air versus Pro, it's missing a bunch of stuff that the Magic Keyboard has, but it's cheaper. So. You get a cheaper little laptop, and it does have that 11-inch MacBook Air feel a little bit when you're using it. It's just like, oh, this is so little, which I like. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
There it is. It's the MacBook, or it's the MacBook. It's the iPad Air 4.
I it's interesting. I will probably be in the market for an iPad replacement maybe next year. I'm on the last of the pre-redesigned iPad Pros, the 2017 model.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fine. I have noticed occasionally some glitches and things with that. I had a fun bug this week, which is not limited to this, but the Dropbox app was running in the background constantly. And like I had it plugged into my computer and it was still draining the battery. And I was like, well, this is bad. And it turned out, I think I've resolved it at the moment. There is some bug somewhere where if you have it on as a location in the Files app, it runs constantly in the background. I don't know if it's Dropbox or Apple, but somebody's causing a problem there. I was at like, 15%, and I was plugged in, and I was like, it's still going down. it's just one of those things where this iPad is fine for the moment. I haven't had any significant problems with it. It's mainly a matter of coveting the newer ones. And it's like, well, would I go with an Air or Pro? It's like, well, at the very least, I will wait to see where Apple goes with a Pro before replacing this. I'm not sure, and that is in balance as well with the fact that the Macs are going to see major revisions imminently. So, if I get a new Apple Silicon laptop that is, light and fast, do I need a new iPad immediately? Probably not. I could probably wait for a while. But I like the design direction everything is going. I like the flat sides on the iPads and the phones. It feels like the Apple's codifying that a bit.
Oh, yeah. Those phones, I mean, it's such a good design. They did such a good job. And it's weird because I usually get to a chance to hold them at the event, right? But it was an entirely virtual event. So I open my box on Tuesday and I get to hold them. And it's really good. I like it a lot. I prefer it greatly to the curved edge design that they've been running since the iPhone 6 in various forms. Like it's really nice. And I do prefer the 12 to the 12 Pro because I prefer that kind of matte aluminum over the stainless steel with the sort of shiny coating. Like, I mean, it's purely a design aesthetic kind of and feel choice, but I think that black 12 that I've got is it's gorgeous. Although I would like to see the blue one because I bet the blue one is even better.
Yeah, if it weren't for the camera system, I think to me that's the biggest holdback. I've gotten really accustomed to the telephoto and not having that. Like everything else about it, I agree with you, the aesthetics. Not having seen them in person, but purely from Apple's own marketing materials and in early reviews and stuff like that, the aesthetics on the 12, I agree, they seem much more attractive to me than the 12 Pro. It's still a little too shiny. It's got the fingerprint problem on the edges. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like the colors; they're a little deeper, richer, more saturated on the main line. So, but like that's it's form versus function, I guess.
Yeah. It's. And it's cheaper. So I guess what I would say is it is, I think, a photographic decision is the biggest part of it is just losing the telephoto camera. And I've heard people, and I think they're trying in part to just sort of rationalize it, but saying that the telephoto camera isn't that great. And so, mm-hmm. Really get closer. That's what you want to do.
Right.
And I get that. I use and I've said this before, I use the telephoto way more than I use the wide. And so, although they did improve the distortion stuff on the wide, is better now. But like, I don't know. I'm not sure I care enough about the telephoto to end up with a phone that's more expensive that I like less. But I think that's a personal decision everybody's going to have to make. And a lot of people, what I find fascinating is Apple really is putting pro features in, like the more features in the pro that are actually pro, that are pro photography, pro video. And you're saying, well, who needs a professional phone? And the answer is, well, not a lot of people, but there are also a lot of people who like the fact that they've got the pro quality hardware, and Apple knows that. And it's a way to differentiate.
More and more stuff will continue to do that. That's traditional, as we were just talking about with the Air as well, a lot more stuff tends to trickle down. And, there will be a point at which, like, the iPhone 12 or whatever the mainline series phone will get the telephoto lens probably eventually. But that'll be because the Pro has, like, another lens or something else on it, right? Like, it's always a matter of, do you want to be on the cutting edge?
Right.
Or are you okay being kind of, like, a little bit behind there? I've been thinking about potentially convincing my mom to upgrade her phone. She has a first-generation SE. Which is still chugging along there, but she doesn't use the phone for anything particularly intensive, but she likes the size. And I was like, well, the iPhone 12 mini, that might be the next best thing at this point. It's definitely bigger, but it is the closest you can get to a first generation SE.
You get
a whole bunch of nice stuff with it.
Yeah, it's not a lot bigger. It's a little bit bigger, but it's not a lot
bigger. Right. Yeah. So I'm strongly thinking about making that a Christmas present this year.
It's going to be interesting because these things are coming out. The outliers are coming out next month. So we have in, you know, in 3 weeks or whatever. So that's also interesting that, you know, we've got this first wave of the sort of standard sized phone, and then the outliers will come. And I'm looking forward to that because, you know, that's where you've got some interesting different optics on the Pro Max camera. And then you've got the Mini, which is just unlike any iPhone we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Even though I think that Apple, you know, made this production decision on purpose because these are the mainstream phones. These are the ones that hit the sweet spot. I get it.
Right. Well, and they share a chassis design too. So they clearly do.
All the accessories
production of it, the production of it was probably more streamlined, right? They had easier to produce two phones with the exact same, you know, chassis design. If that's like what your limiting factor is, it's possible they just put those into production first. And so the smaller outliers, they're like, oh, we'll make those cases later. And then everything got delayed anyways. So, you know, I'm sure they would have loved to deliver all of them at the same time, but such are the vagaries of life. I'm curious to note, and I think a lot of this will be interesting to see how well, you know, Apple doesn't like to break out, obviously, line-by-line performance, but I imagine one of these financial calls will involve some color about how the lower, you know, the smaller and bigger sizes perform, potentially. And I think that's interesting because it will tell us potentially whether Apple will continue down that road, right? The larger phone has basically been a lock since the larger phones started coming out. What was it, the 6? Six plus?
6 plus.
So ever since then, you know, Apple's been happy to go and sell you a larger phone. But this is the first time that there's a smaller phone. And so depending on how many people actually buy it, it will dictate to a certain extent whether Apple will continue to produce a smaller model of the phone, because we've seen them before
come out
with these one-offs of, like, you know, things like the 5C and the 10R, where it's like, you know, these are kind of they're filling a niche, but, you know, they don't tend to last very long. So I'm hopeful that the 12 mini will be that size will be a staple, so that it's just sort of, you know, an option for people looking to buy a phone and make a distinction.
Like the Pro Max, which has stuck around that plus Pro Max size. All right. Well, we'll find out next time. You'll have a phone.
I almost have a phone now. It's now. Hold on, Jason. We're updating the live map. It's farther away.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm still holding on to that, fingers crossed, for that 12:15 to 4:15 p.m. window, which we're in now.
We are in that.
We're now in.
Good luck.
I don't know. I'll go chase him down. That's even more discouraged than usual this year.
Wow. All right. Well, good luck to everybody out there. If you're waiting for an iPhone, and if you're not, then good job, I guess. And you either have it or you decide not to order one, or I don't know. But if it is your iPhone day, I hope you have a fun iPhone day. And use an iCloud backup. That's my recommendation. But until next week, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.